بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. كذلك جعلنا لكل نبي عدوا. Every Nabi had an opposition. Similar will be the case of the Na'ibin of the Anbiya alayhi salam, those that are the deputies of the Anbiya, they will have a similar situation, similar challenge. So if there was someone that was on the Sunnah and on the path of righteousness and virtue, then you will have someone opposing it. So this will carry on. There won't be a period in time where there is only righteousness and virtue, and nor will there be a period in time that there will be only sin. Just until before Qiyamah, there may be some changing situations, that is before Qiyamah. But otherwise, قائمين على الحق, there will be one group that is steadfast on the right path. Then there will be that group that is opposing. If you look at the Indian subcontinent, undivided India, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, that was all one until say 1940s, 50s somewhere. Before that it was all one. Then it was divided. So they also, they had the opposition. Muslims ruled up until approximately the 17th century. Mughals had ruled. The English had come in, and initially they had come as tradesmen, and they found India to be a very, very wealthy, very thriving country in all minerals, in technology, in every type of department they had progressed, clothing, manufacturing, minerals, and the type of progress they had made, and very few countries had made such progress. They had made such progress that they would make that type of material, that whole material, you know, your whole kurta, what amount of cloth is required to make a kurta, all that, if it's folded, it can fit into a matchbox. So that's the advancement they had made. But then you had another group coming in, this capitalist and all that come in. So obviously, their whole outlook is different. The outlook is they must control the economy, and you must be enslaved to them. To them and to their system, you need to be enslaved. So they will work the plan. They don't get tired in working their plan. They will work their plan. But Allah Ta'ala help us that we don't get caught up into that plan. So when they had come initially, they had found that the Muslims were the rulers. So somehow to hoodwink them and somehow to bluff them. Initially, when they had got the helm of the government, they had control over the government, the first thing that they started off was to burn the Quran Sharif. Wherever they would find Quran Sharif being sold, they would take all, they would buy all the Quran and they would burn it. Some of the old explained to them, but what is the need of you burning the Quran Sharif? Do you know that if you are going to try to burn and eliminate the Quran Sharif in this way, then these people's hearts contain the Quran Sharif. How are you going to burn that? You're not going to eliminate it from the surface entirely. So then, at the second level, they went and massacred Muslims. They went and massacred Muslims, killed indiscriminately. Thousands, hundreds and thousands were killed. And so merciless and in cold blood that every alim has to be killed. Hafiz, alim must be killed. And what is the indication of an alim or a hafiz? He is wearing a kurta, keeps a beard, and wears a topi or a turban. So that's an indication of a Muslim alim or hafiz, and he must be killed. So that was also done. And to make it even more frightening, those bodies were made to be suspended on trees in every prominent position. Now you see your own father's body suspended on the tree, what goes into your heart. That was left. You go and touch that body, you are beheaded. So you can't remove your father and give him a respectful funeral or a janazah, and nor can you can your eyes tolerate this sight. You just have to leave it as it is, let it rot and decay, or let the birds and the vultures eat off that body. So they tried that as well, and that also did not work out for them as they had expected and as they had designed. That is the Noor of Allah Ta'ala. أَرْسَلَ رَسُولَهُ بِالْهُدَىٰ وَدِينِ الْحَقِّ لِيُزْهِرَهُ عَلَى الدِّينِ كُلِّ يُرِيدُونَ لِيُطْفِئُوا نُورَ اللَّهِ. They try to extinguish this light of Allah Ta'ala. They can't extinguish it. If all the world tried to extinguish the light of Allah Ta'ala, that is impossible. That light will definitely overpower. It will dominate. This also did not work out. Then they tried a third approach. Now the third approach was, they began to show a lot of importance to English, right? And then if anybody was a Christian, anybody was a Christian having and bearing a Christian name, then he was able to get a job, secure a job in any government position. I remember now, this is now India back 300 years ago, when getting a job and all that was quite difficult, because they had done a lot of things before this. Like I say, they were so fine in the art and all that, they could produce that type of material. So they made their own factories. English made their own factories. And people that were doing private industry, all private industry had to be stopped. And if anybody was caught, up to now it's recorded, Indian history is recorded, then their thumbs would be cut off. So you tell me if someone's thumb is cut off, can he work? They depend on the hand to do whatever they are doing, and the thumbs are cut off, they can't work. The man is made totally disabled, he can't work. So he's forced to go work into their factories. See, capitalist again. Just that we don't read our history, and then we get caught up in a culture that is alien to us, it's foreign to us. Now, these big industries, etc., are under their control. So most of the people have to look for a job. So now, you will only qualify for a job if you are a Christian. Higher job, higher position, you will only qualify for that if you are a Christian bearing a Christian name. You want to see some example for that, and just cross over the border to Malawi. Up till 25-30 years ago, you had to have a Christian name to be entered into a government school. You don't have a Christian name, then you can't get admission into a government school. Some of our workers are the same. They say, no, because all the names, we had to give our children those names that our children could be admitted into school. Failing which, they don't recognize them, they aren't admitted, they can't progress. So that was the third level that they tried. So until and unless you're not a Christian, you don't deserve any type of luxury, any comfort, any convenience wasn't made available to you. Then that was the third level. In the third level, what they had started with is they had also engaged people in munazara and debates. There you find that pastor, funder, great person, and Maulana Rahmatullah Kairanvi, he had opposed him, he had challenged him. And that funder, he had been embarrassed and he could not face up to Maulana Rahmatullah Kairanvi. You know that kitab, Izharul Haq. Up till now it's printed in English. Late Mr. Didat, right? He drew all whatever he drew from that kitab. He was able to stand up against them because of this book, Izharul Haq. Maulana Rahmatullah Kairanvi Rahmatullah was buried in Makkah Mukarrama. But thereafter, Maulana Rahmatullah had to escape for his life. because they knew now he is the spokes in the works. So he had to run away, and he took refuge in Makkah Mukarramah. It was the Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire was approached by the English government that now you must send Maulana Rahmatullah to us. The Ottoman Empire replied that Maulana Rahmatullah is in the haram of Allah Ta'ala. No power on the earth has the right to take him out. He has come and taken asylum right in the haram of Allah Ta'ala. We don't have the right to pull him out from the haram of Allah Ta'ala. So that was that level, that was that zamana. Then you find the likes of Muhammad Qasim Sahib Nanutwi Rahmatullah Alayhi. And he had also challenged them in the Munazara Shah Jahanpuri, where it was multi-religion. You know how you have multi-religion now? So he had participated in that, and he had made sure that Islam is elevated and every other religion would seem to be embarrassed in the face of Islam. In fact, the Englishman that was presiding over this whole Munazara, he said in his writings, he had written that if Iman was based on listening to any person's bayan and talk, then I would have definitely been a Muslim listening to the bayan of Mawlana Qasim Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. It was an embarrassment for anybody to stand and speak before him. It's like a grade one child speaking in the presence of an advocate trying to challenge him. It was so embarrassing. Allah Ta'ala opened his heart. Allah Ta'ala opened his heart and he was speaking, just pearls were just flowing. Now, these people couldn't see all these things. Then the war started off. 1857 was that mutiny. See, all the different, showing the different phases that went through. Right? The war started. Then the ulama of Deoband, Mawlana Qasim Sahib Nanutwi, Mawlana Rashid Ahmad Gangohi Sahib Rahmatullah, and Haji Madullah Sahib Rahmatullah, they fought against the English. They fought them, they killed many of them, but thereafter, English was an overwhelming force. Millions they got. They got Punjabis and all that. All in their armies they've got. Now, you don't stand a chance. You are 100, 200 people. Where are you going to stand before them? So they had to escape. Hazrat Haji Mzadullah Sahib Rahmatullah had gone to Makkah Mukarramah. Hazrat Mawlana Qasim Nanutwi Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh they tried to imprison him, apprehend him twice. But now look at the adherence to the Sunnah. The adherence of the Sunnah. I want to show you this. If they excelled in ilm, then they excelled in other departments of deen, jihad, working amongst people, they had excelled there as well. So they came to the defense of Islam at every front. From one front they had defended Islam, then they were defending Islam from other fronts as well. In spite of the fact, Mawlana Qasim Sahib was a thin, small-looking person. But they say explosive comes in small packages. He was like that. So when they had sent out a warrant of arrest against him, he was in hiding at the time, and 3 days had elapsed. And the third day had just ended, and he said, no, I can't remain here. The ladies began to cry. See, you coming out is death. It's imminent death. He says, no, I can't. Rasulullah Pak Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam remained in the cave only for 3 days, not more than 3 days. I don't want to go against the Sunnah. You see the levels. We don't stand anywhere near them. That's why we speak about this Aslaf, because of the adherence of the Sunnah. The adherence of the Sunnah is a very, very high level. So Mawlana had come out from that, and he was in the Chatta Masjid. Somehow, some informant told that Mawlana is somewhere on here. So here he comes to Mawlana. We're looking for Mawlana Qasim Nanutwi Rahmatullah Alayh. Mawlana takes 2 steps. So he, just a second ago he was here. Again, he avoided a clear lie. Just a second ago the man was here. And he went away. Anyway, Mawlana Gangohi Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh was taken as a prisoner and he was kept in prison for 6 months. Then at the trial, they approached him and they say that we hear that you've been working, you've been causing corruption. That's the word they use. You've been causing corruption. So Mawlana says that not even my forefathers had ever been involved in corruption. See the words. Not even my forefathers had ever engaged in any type of corruption. they couldn't get him on that score. Then they say, we hear that you all have stockpiled weapons against us. Umar took out his tasbih and said, this is my weapon. This is my weapon. Anyway, he was imprisoned for approximately 6 months. But I want to show you what type of personalities these people were. After 6 months, he was released. So one of the prison inmates, he cried to Maulana, Maulana, you know, in prison, you were teaching me Quran Sharif. Now you're going to be released. Who's going to complete my Quran Sharif? Maulana says, there's nothing for you to be remorseful about. I will make sure I will remain here until the completion of your Quran, then will I come out of the prison. Though it will be an embarrassment that he was in prison, it will be an embarrassment, but I will remain here. I will get your Quran Sharif complete. Once your Quran Sharif is complete, then I'll leave the prison. So this was that third level or fourth level that they had come up with. So they found that at that level also they can't make any headway. So they started another way. And they began to kill ulama again at 1857, they began to kill. Massacre. Thousands and thousands and thousands were just massacred. Now the problem was, all ulama, young, old, middle-aged, many ulama, huffaz, and the Muslims are being massacred. Right? And when they massacred, now, obviously they'll leave behind young, growing children. Someone is 1 year old, 2 year old, 5 year old, 3 year old, all sizes, children. Right? The mothers cannot sustain them, they cannot take care of them. What are they to do? So now the English, they changed the whole strategy. The whole strategy now changed. And they say now the government has moved. The old government has been relinquished of its powers. It's off. Now a new government has come in place. And the new government apologizes to all the Indians for the wrongs that the old government had committed. Finish. Apology, maaf, everything's over now. You see? That was the. But now, within the maafi, within the apology, there is another trick within the apology. Now, they apologized and they made themselves appear like the champions. Oh, we come apologetic attitude that we were not wrong, the previous government was wrong, we pushed them out of the way, a new government has come in. As though the Inkatha has gone, the ANC has come in, new government coming. But with their coming in, what they did was they built thousands of orphanages. Right? They built thousands of orphanages. Now, what was the need to build orphanage? Now, these ulama, mashayikh, huffaz, etc., their children are all orphaned. When they orphaned, now they are at the mercy. They are at the mercy of these people. And they made an announcement, anybody wants to send his child, he can send his child to this orphanage. Right? Do you see that? What's the plan? Now these are pure convent, Christian convents. To indoctrinate, to brainwash those little children of ulama, huffaz, buzruganadin, mashayikh. Their children are helpless. They've got no place, no asylum they've got. Their mothers can't work, they can't generate income. How are they going to look after children? It wasn't a zamana like now, where you got family planning. So one woman has got 5 children, 10 children, 8 children they have got. How are they to sustain? So around this time, in the Indian history, where these type of darulums established, Darulum Dioban was established around these type of circumstance. Now, you've got your children, send them to us, we will look after them. It was one of two things they could have done. Then in the ulama, there were two groups. Hazrat Shaykh ul Hind, Mahmud ul Hasan Sahib, rahmatullah alayhi, right, he fought very, very bravely, very bravely. I say fought, not in the literal sense of the word, but he fought against his oppositions. He fought very bravely. Mawlana Manasir Ahsan Jilani, rahmatullah alayhi, says, Mawlana Shaykh Hind was my ustad. So, this type of discussion was going on amongst the students. What were the circumstances for the madrasa starting off? What were the circumstances? So this was one, as I explained, this was the one type of circumstance that what's prevailing that necessitated the building of madrasas. The second thing was the Muslims realized now that we won't be able to take on this English. In warfare, they are very, very big in number. They got all the finance, they got people, they've got warfare. We can't take them on. Now, we have to come to our defense. If you're going to fight them, then they will just squash us. They will just suppress us. They will trample us. And what's going to happen to the multitudes here? Right. What's going to happen? Who's going to take care of them? Right. That was one. If we engage them in fight, then all our ulama will be in the fight. And the multitudes of the Muslims are going to be neglected. So that was one front, that we fight them, we take them on, and we engage in battle. So that will be a long drawn thing. In the meanwhile, they will, because they got wealth, they got everything, and the chances are, just for their survival, people will do anything. Like you see today, they can sell their faith for anything. Right? So that will be the possibility. So what is the second alternative? See, the idea is ilahi kalimatillah, to elevate and to exalt the word of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That's the idea, right? Now, you know, you don't have the strength in the battlefield. You don't have the strength. You don't have the numbers. You don't have the type of power. What do you do? You're going to engage them. It's not going to be right. You don't have the numbers. You know they will trample you. They will smash you down. So the other is now to struggle, right, to compensate for that loss. See, that loss that the Muslims had incurred in battle, right? The loss that they had incurred, now to compensate for that. You understand? There was a loss now. They had suffered some temporary loss. Now, how do we compensate for it? How do we come back to that original Muslim? We're going to go in this route here, we don't have the strength. Like now in this country, for example, now you want to fight the government. Do you have the strength? Do you have the personnel? You don't have it. Then what is the logical way of your survival? You understand? You have to survive. Right? You have to survive. When you have to survive, then what are you going to do? What they did was they chopped off and they beheaded all ulama-i-kiram. Imagine, I just want to illustrate this point to you. Whichever alim they found, and they went and beheaded him. Now you look at any community, any town, ulama are gone, hufas are gone, right? As weak as they may be, as mistaken as they may be, but you got some ulama, some people that are religiously committed, they have got consciousness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, right? Now there is a direction in that community. Minus this type of group, what happens? Tell me. اتخذوا الناس رؤوسا جهالا فضلوا وأضلوا. There is no one to give guidance, no one to give direction, right? What will happen now? Gradually, when there is no one to give direction, then you will see the multitudes, how they behave. Right? You will see the multitudes, how they behave. It's intermingling now. Everybody is intermingling. Right? If it is people are taking to a certain fashion, people all take to a certain fashion. If it is that people have left out the hijab and the burqa, etc., people will do all that. Why? Because there is no alim to give guidance. There's no one to give direction. When there is no one to give direction, then these people will give the direction. You see, that is at the fifth level. The fifth level, now they know that we have the ability to influence. We have the ability to enforce our ways. So now, they have taken control of two things. See, I showed you these four levels that they had come to. Now, the fifth level they came. The fifth level, when they come up, is they came up with two attacks. One is they took control of the universities and schools, right? Number one, they took control of that. And number two is they took control of the media. Now you tell me, what influences the mass most? Tell me. Is there anything that can influence people as much as the media and the universities? Is there anything? Can you show me anything that has so much of influence, such a powerful influence? Nothing. It's the media and it's this university, this type of schools, right? So they will have that type of influence. Right. Now when people are at the mercy of the influence of this media and the influence of schools and universities, then after a period of time they begin to think in that way. They begin to behave in that way. They begin to reason in that way. They don't even realize it. They are conducting themselves. They're behaving. But who's shaping their destiny? It is either the media that is shaping their destiny, or the schools and the universities that they're attending that's shaping their whole itinerary in life is being shaped by this. No, Islam is not shaping it. Now the schools and the media have to say, now this is very important. They have to say, for example, medical insurance is very, very important. You must do it. Every person, you must do it. Don't do it. What's going to happen? You've got a heart attack. What is it going to do? So they will give you a heart attack to come to their line. They will give you a heart attack that you must go on that line. If you don't go on that line, then something is going to happen. Something is going to backfire. Then what pillar have you got to support yourself? What have you got? See how they shape your whole itinerary. So now the ulama realized this. They sense all this. They could see Allah opens the hearts. Right? شَرَحَ اللَّهُ صَدْرَهُ لِلْإِسْلَامِ Allah opens their heart. They open the heart and their vision becomes very great. They can see what you can't see. Their understanding is far greater than what's your understanding. You see, these ulama-i kiram of the past, they went cutting grass. Imam Shafi, rahmatullahi, Imam Abu Hanifa, rahmatullahi, Imam Malik, Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal, rahmatullahi, they were cutting grass. That vision of theirs was so great that the plan that they had worked out is lasting till today. Do you ever think about that? See that what they worked out, whatever the fiqh they worked out, is lasting till today. Everybody is dependent on them. The whole world is dependent on them. But what was the vision? Allah had given them that vision. He had brightened their hearts. He had given them that understanding that you need to do this. The imams of hadith, what vision Allah had given them, that you need to prepare this and the whole world will be subservient to you. So Allah had given them that type of understanding, that shara sadr. He opened their hearts, he opened their minds. So they prepared something, they prepared a dish, a deg they prepared, better than the deg of Ajmer Sharif. Right? And that deg is lasting, we're all eating from that deg up till now. Can anybody say that he's independent of all these kitabs of hadith? Can he say that? Can he say he's independent of fiqh? Of the imams. Can you say he's independent? He's not. Nobody can say that. Everybody is dependent. So that was on account of the shara sadr that Allah Ta'ala blessed them. So that was in that zamana, that was the need. One zamana was the need of hadith. Then was a zamana of the need of fiqh. So Allah Ta'ala prepared them, he opened their hearts. When he opened their hearts, they prepared these things. And today, we are eating of that. We are enjoying of that. As though they did everything. They planted the seed, they cultivated, thereafter they harvested, and after the harvesting they grinded it into fine flour, they made the roti. Now it's on the plate, just pick it up and put it into your mouth. As though they did everything. They harvested, they cultivated, they crushed the grain, they made it into fine powder, they made the roti also, they made the bread also. Now Hazrat, now eat of it now. Now they're doing it even worse. Now they are spoon feeding you. Madrasa, what's happened? Compared to what was in the past, now they are, bhai, open your mouth, just take this. Open your mouth, take this. They are spoon feeding you. Do you see that? So that was in that zamana, and that was required in that zamana. Right? Now it's a challenge in this zamana, in this time and age. Every zamana will come with a different challenge. Right? So now, the challenge from the kuffar is one. And how do we overcome the challenge? So their challenge in this zamana now is the media and the university, the style. Right? So as a result, you'll find that anybody that goes into their system, right? W.W. Hunter, he writes, right, that anybody goes through our system, anybody that enters our system, then definitely, be it a Jew, a Christian, a Buddhist, a Hindu, a Muslim, anybody that goes through our system, we will shatter his belief. In name he will be a Muslim, but definitely his belief will be shattered. There will be thoughts that will be anti-Islam, that will be running within his system. But how do you work this out? This theory of Darwin, how do you work it out? What explanation have you got? And how do you work this out? The science, the scientific theory, how do you work it out? So he's a Muslim by name, but his mind, his belief has been shattered down. So what he said was on the dot. You go and ask, and you will find out from them that their belief has been shattered, if not very largely, to some extent has been shattered. So the whole itinerary, the whole system was designed in a way, for everything you must know the reason, Now you tell me, how many people have the ability to reason correctly? How many people? Everybody doesn't have that ability to reason to the highest level. One person has that ability at one level, one person has an ability at a second level. So now, he's trained your mind, they train your mind to reason, and you don't accept anything without reason. Now that means it's a jahil, now he doesn't know something. So he will not accept that Islam that he cannot, his reasoning cannot accept. For example, he says, what's wrong in zina now? Just for example. So he may have to analyze it himself. Now what's wrong? What's the wrong in zina? And that happened really, it happened in India. One person approached Mawlana Thanvi Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, and he says, why is photography haram? You see, this is a product of a school. That belief has been shattered. That belief has been shattered. When the belief is shattered, that belief is your foundation. Everything else is just the structure. The belief has been shattered. The man asking, a Muslim asking this question, what does it amount to? It amounts to the fact that his belief has been shattered. When his belief is shattered, therefore he's asking this type of questions. Otherwise, he won't ask this type of questions. Well, Yunus Patel was saying, one girl is in high school or whatever, and she phoned up to him, or she wrote a letter to him, that my teacher, or my instructor, or my lecturer, whoever it was, he has convinced me that the theory of Darwin is completely true. There is no creator. I'm absolutely convinced, Muslim girl coming from a Muslim background, and she's been convinced by her lecturer that there is no God. Now, do you see the type of rot, do you see the type of filth, do you see the type of disaster that it's brought? See, so this is, one is from the media, one is from the universities, schools, etc. They have brought so much of danger, so much of destruction. On the other hand, if the Muslims didn't go in that direction, right, materially, they will be backwards. Their faith will not be destroyed. They will not be compromising their faith. Though materially they go backwards, you know, logically. But that also doesn't happen. You don't see that person who hasn't been to university or school, he's backwards always. You look at about 10 of the most wealthiest people in Durban, you'll find they went to standard 6 to school. 5, 6. Some of them, I spoke to them myself. At least about 3-4 most wealthiest people in Durban. All of them, 5, 6, 7. I said, hey, did that school ever benefit? You know, only that arithmetic and mathematics that benefited us. Otherwise, we picked it up ourselves. How they picked it up? And they tell you, now we got so many accountants all working for us. Really, they tell you that we got so many accountants working for us. So they indoctrinate you to convince you that if you don't go with the system, you will definitely fail. You will be a disaster. How are you going to sustain life? You see. And when they have indoctrinated you in this way, right, now you need to look for your security and your asylum. So the madrasa was founded because of that. Now, this is the attack. In one zamana, it was an attack, and the attack was force and with cannons and bombs and all that. Now the attack that is coming against Islam is not with that. Now it's coming with an ideology. It's an ideological warfare. So how do we combat them? How do we overcome them? It's an ideology against an ideology. It's a belief against a belief. Right? It's a culture against a culture. Right? Now when they push that against you, now you're the recipient. Now you need to survive. You need to look for your survival. If you don't look for your survival, then eventually you get influenced. Now I want to show you how we get influenced. How we get influenced. Now you look at least 40%, 50% of Muslim homes, right? Those that are a little bit dini conscious, they will have an abaya above, right? And within them they got the jeans and they got the t-shirts. Is it a fact or not? Inside they have got that same Kufristan, right? Kufristan is inside them. The jeans are there, the t-shirt is there. And outside they got Islamabad. Islam to Abad hai, upar se. Inside is Kufristan. Is it a fact or not? You think for yourself, where is this coming from? It is coming from the same thinking, that same type of media, the same type of understanding and reasoning is bringing them. So what does it amount to? That they have decayed your inside. Your inside has been decayed. Outside, outwardly you're showing an Islam, but inside you're rotten. Inside you're rotten. Outside you're showing, you're portraying Islam. But inside, you got the jeans and you got the t-shirts. And as a result, there's so much of jinnas floating around because of these jeans. Where they got these jeans, then the jeans have taken over them. Now you're going for tawis, you're going for this, you're going for that. Why take out the jeans, something will come right in your life. Right? Do you see how they indoctrinate, how they brainwash? How they brainwash. So they will brainwash. This is all their, this is the, it's a warfare. It's a warfare. Don't consider it as a casual thing, as a light thing. It's a warfare. They are fighting you. But they are fighting you through these things, these avenues they are fighting you with. And then you become the recipient. You take it. No, what's wrong with this? And at every level that they take you, say, no, it's not too bad. It's all right. It's not too bad. It's not so bad. It's not so bad. Everything you give into, not so bad. Until you get totally sucked into the system, then you can't get out of the system. And so what's wrong in this? What's wrong in wearing a jeans? And I covered my legs. What's wrong in wearing a t-shirt? It's also my covered. Everything is covered. So what's wrong? So they will justify. You see that reasoning that has come from where it's come to justify, to reason themselves. So now I've covered myself. My body is covered. The top of my body is covered. The bottom part of my body is covered. So what's wrong? What are you stressing all about? I've covered myself. Why are you stressing? So now, in the wake of all this what's going on, what's the Muslim survival? What is the way to survive? What is the way to sustain yourself? How do you move on from here? The safest is the path of the Salaf-e-Salihin, pious, the righteous of the past. They come with the system, and the system had managed to survive the test of time. All the tests that they've gone through, they managed to save, they managed to sustain themselves. Whatever difficulties came their way, they sustained, they protected themselves, they guarded themselves. They sustained themselves against the most odd of challenges. Allah Pak says that Ista'idh billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Seek protection against the shaitan mardood, right? Outwardly, see, there are two type of enemies that you have. Outwardly, there are two type of enemies. One enemy is from within man, right? So that enemy that comes from within man, right? It is not a big problem in destroying that enemy. Because there are three levels that you will work with that enemy that's coming from within your own species, right? Within your own species, if there is an enmity that is coming up, then there's about a 3-4 point plan that you work to try and quell that enemy. What is the plan? First, you will talk to him nicely, right? You will talk to him nicely. Idfa bil lati hiya ahsan. Talk to him nicely, gently, and try and ward him off. Either he'll become your friend, or either you avoid him. A'arid anil jahilin. You avoid him, or either he'll become your friend. One of the two will happen. Salamun alaykum la nabtaghil jahilin. So that's the one level that you avoid your enemy, right? If he is not prepared for that, and he engages you in a discussion, or in a discussion also perhaps you can prevail, right? That's a second level. And then if he's not satisfied with that, then he engages you in fight and warfare. Then too, if you are killed at his hands, you're not at a loss. Ihdal husnain. Either you get to Jannat, you get Shahadat, or either you overcome the enemy, right? One of the two happens. You overcome the enemy, or either he gives you Shahadat and you, or you have the upper hand, right? So if it's an encounter, then it's not a big problem. Even if the worst scenario, you become shaheed, you get straight into Jannat, right? The best scenario is you overcome him and you gain the booty of the war, right? So this is the one type of enemy that's coming from within your species, that is man. You start off with him with politeness and kindness, right? And if that doesn't work out, then a little bit of discussion. If that doesn't work out, then you engage in a fight. Engage in a fight, then too, if he defeats you, you become shaheed, right? So you won that count. The second type of enemy is that enemy that is not visible to you. And that enemy is the shaitan and your nafs. So can you see your nafs? You can't see it. Can you see shaitan? You can't see it. So this is the two types of enemies that you will have. The one is nafs and shaitan. Nafs. And the second one is shaitan. And one is yourself and your brotherhood, your own people. And the second is nafs and shaitan. Right? So now, as far as mankind is concerned, you know how to suppress him. You know how to defeat him. You know how to overcome him. But as far as nafs and shaitan is concerned, then how do you overcome him? Because there's a serious problem here. The problem is double-fold. One is you don't see your enemy. يَرَاهُ هُوَ وَقَبِيلُهُ مِنْ حَيْثُ لَا تَرَوْنُمْ. He sees you, and you cannot see him. You cannot see him. Can you see shaitan? You can't see shaitan. You can't see your nafs. So he's got one advantage over you. Number two is, if a man has defeated you and killed you, you become shaheed, right? But if shaitan or your nafs has overpowered you, then what? Then you're going straight to Jahannam. If the shaitan has overpowered you, or your nafs has overpowered you, then what's happened? Then you're going straight to Jahannam. So now that's a very complicated war. How do you overcome this? So Allah Pak says, فَاسْتَعِذْ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ. Then you seek protection in me against shaitan, the rejected. Right? You seek protection in me against the rejected shaitan. Because you will not be able to quell him. You will not be able to overcome him with your own intelligence, with your own reason. You can't. Imam Razi, rahmatullah alayhi, the shaitan had engaged him in a debate. Engaged him in a debate. Carried on. No, I got one argument. No, I can better that argument. Shaitan has got so much of time and he's got so much of history behind him. So every argument he's using, this man is countering his argument. Shaitan is countering the argument. One, second, third, fourth, fifth. Shaitan asks Imam Razi, rahmatullah alayhi, he's an imam. When you say an imam, he's the leader of that science, you know, if it's tafsir or if it's Quran, now he is the leader in that. The one that is most outstanding, you call him the imam. In any field, any science, the man that is outstanding, you call him an imam. Like Imam Bukhari, he's most outstanding in that department, so you call him an imam. He's an imam in that field. When we say imam, generally we think the imam of the masjid, right? But the imam really means the man that is really outstanding in that field. In that science, he's really outstanding, so you call him an imam in that field. So now he was titled an imam, and shaitan is overpowering. He's giving proofs and shaitan is smashing him. He's giving proofs and shaitan is smashing him. Shaitan asked him, you know what, is your iman stronger or the iman of this person that is working the field, is cultivating the field, is your iman stronger or his iman stronger? So he says, obviously my iman, because my iman is based upon reason. And his iman is based upon following. He just saw his grandfather, forefathers are all following a certain faith and a certain creed, and he went on that path. And my iman is based upon reasoning, sound reasoning. So obviously my faith is stronger than his faith. So shaitan tells him, go and bluff children, go and deceive children. I will show you the strength of your faith. So shaitan is smashing all his reasoning. So, all right, let me take you to this peasant. So he goes to that peasant, that farmer, who's working the field, and he asks him, how many gods are they? Obviously one. With the peasant, that farmer, Jahil, says, obviously one. He says, all right. And if I prove to you that's more than one god, he says, you see this pickaxe of mine that will bust your head. Now Shaitan says, now, hey, with these giants, how can we ever reason? How can we ever reason with these people? We can't reason with them. You talk to them and they want to smash you. So you can't, there's no way to reason. But Shaitan has left a discreet lesson for us. What lesson he's left behind for us? He said, don't engage with me in debate. You can debate with your own counterparts, but with me you don't engage in debate. Because every reasoning you tender, I will counter. You reason and I will counter. You will reason and I will counter. You see in namaz, you just start with a conversation with Shaitan. Let's see. He will keep taking you in a circle until you say, namaz. He'll take you right till the end. Right, you have come to salam, then you say, assalamu alaikum. Oh, now I mean namaz. So Allah Pak has told you that you ask for my protection. You won't be able to succumb this blow of Shaitan, you won't be able to succumb. So you need to take my refuge. And if you think you are wise, then I will assign you to yourself and I will see how much progress you can make against him. Do you see that? You think you are wise and you think you can stand against Shaitan. I want to see what's the level of your intelligence. Can you stand in front of him? You don't have the ability. He will counter you, and when he counter you, he will smash you down. So what you need to do is show Allah Ta'ala that I am helpless. Allah Ta'ala, I am desperate, I am helpless. Right? Innahu, see after this verse, Allah Pak says, Innahu laysa lahu sultanun ala alladhina amanu wa ala rabbihim yatawakkalun. This is being supported, you see. Shaitan doesn't have any control, any authority over who? Believing people who trust in Allah Ta'ala. They don't trust in themselves, not in the intelligence, not in the reasoning, not in their own research. No. They have confidence, they have the trust in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. They have their faith in Allah ta'ala. They have the confidence in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah ta'ala, you can do. We are desperate. We are helpless. We can't do. At any point in their lives, their trust, their confidence, everything is invested in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah ta'ala, we don't have the strength. Straight, we want to say, Allah ta'ala, we don't have the strength. We are desperately in need. Amma yujibul muttarra idha da'a. Then Allah ta'ala comes to your rescue. When you say, you hands up, Allah ta'ala, I got no other way. You're the only refuge, you're the only asylum. Then Allah ta'ala will definitely come to your assistance. The same Imam Razi, rahmatullah alayhi, right? He's on his deathbed and Shaitan is engaging him. One proof. And the second proof, he brought up to 99 proofs. Imagine what a learned person he was. In that deathbed also, he could tender 99 arguments. In the meanwhile, Allah Ta'ala somehow showed his sheikh, whoever his sheikh was, that you know what? This Imam Razi, that is your murid, your talib, your student, and he is in this condition. He is in this condition, pitiable condition. So, that sheikh, from wherever he is, he says, Kehdo is mardood ko, tell this rejected person that I believe in Allah Ta'ala without any reasoning. Without any reasoning, I believe in Allah Ta'ala. And he had to utter that words, that I believe in Allah Ta'ala without reasoning, and then his soul departed the body. See? So, innahu laysa lahu sultanun ala alladhina amanu. Shaitan doesn't have authority and control over those who believe and put their trust in Allah Ta'ala. Allah Ta'ala tawfiq nasib.